can. Well, we hope a few more people come in. Today's presentation is on options. Just while I give us a bit of a rundown of what we're going to be going through, today's presentation is purely of an educational nature only. I'm not going to be giving any specific advice today. Any stocks or any examples I refer to are purely just made up on the spot. I haven't considered in any way the companies I refer to. I tend to pick on BHP and Telstra a lot. Surely just because they're companies everyone knows. In terms of what we're going to be going through today, the first part of the presentation is going to be heavily on how options actually work. We're going to have a bit of a look at what options are, how we price them, basically the risks involved in trading them. We're going to have a look at how market makers operate inside the market. And then the second part of the presentation, we're actually going to look at some of the strategies and how we can actually use options together with our existing portfolio or stocks we may have to create some, strategies that can do a lot more than you could do with a standard equities account. At the end of this presentation, we'll also have a bit of a look at the trading platform and how you can actually place trades. You'll see it's very similar to using an existing Comtech account. So just before I get started, who in the room actually has an options account? Good. I assume most people have a Comtech account? I don't see especially everyone. Trade CFDs or other derivatives? Yeah? Okay. Well, just with the actual presentation I'm going to be giving today, with relation to the pricing of options, options can be as simple or as difficult as you need them to be. We're going to be focusing on the simpler end, the reason being a lot of the mathematics that goes into options pricing, you really don't need to know. That sort of pricing is really useful if you're designing computer systems or if you're looking to arb the market. Personally, I don't really be a bit of a believer in that a retail client can actually arb the market. Reason being, computers will have got to it at the major banks before you've had a chance to even notice the checklist calculations. But we won't be focusing on any of the mathematics today or any of the Greeks involved. Also, we will have a question session at the end. But if I could ask everyone to leave the questions, obviously we have a large crowd today, and if we ask questions, we won't get out on time. So I guess firstly, what actually is an option? Now I'm going to emphasise some of the key points here, because they're really what differentiates an option to other derivatives out there. It's a contract between two parties, giving a right, but not an obligation. Now that's the key to an option, a right, but not an obligation, to buy or sell a security at a specific price, within a specific time, for a set amount of money. Now just a few of the things I want to go through here. Premium. Now some of these are just words that we're going to go through, but a premium is basically what we pay for an option. Best way to think of it is it's like an insurance premium. You pay a certain amount to get that right. Now every option has a few things that we'll have a look at. Now the first one up here is we have an underlying. Options are a derivative, so they get their value with reference to something else. So a BHP option gets its value with relation to movements in the value of BHP. Whether they're puts or calls, they still get their value depending on what the BHP does. An expiry date. Options are limited to life. Unlike some of the like a CFD for example, options expire at a certain point. So for example, in August, call or put, it actually expires tomorrow. Expiries are always the last Thursday, if it's a business day, of the month. Most options will be every single month as well. But sometimes you'll find, depending on how far out you go in the series, that they're every 3 months or 12 months, depending on the situation. They're also going to have a type of option. So for example, a call or a put. Basically, a call is a right to buy at a specific price at a specific point in the future. Now, we're going to go through this in more detail in the future. This is really just to introduce ourselves to some of these concepts of the terminology. A put is a right to sell at a predetermined price at some point in the future. Premium, we've already gone through that, and that's one of the important things. It's basically what we pay for the option. What the option is about, the actual option price is, what it costs us to buy. And the strike price, this is very important. With all the examples I'm going to go through today, I'm going to clearly point out the strike. Because the strike is the level at which the option starts to take on value. Whether it be a call or a put, and we'll look at the actual levels, but basically it's the level at which the option starts to trigger. So let's have a look at the call first, because the call is probably the one that most people start with when they're first trading options. Basically, when we're long a call, basically we're buying the right to buy a specific underlying security, say BHP, at a specific price in the future. Now when we're short, if we can sell options as easy as we can buy them, when we're actually short, we're selling somebody else that right, and we're taking on an obligation. Now today's presentation, I'm not going to be focusing at all on rights and of options, with the exception of one strategy which we'll go through. The reason being, when we're writing options, the risk can quite literally be unlimited. Most of the strategies we're going to be looking at today, we can pretty much tell you at the date at which we take out the position exactly what the maximum loss is. Worst case scenario, we can tell you straight away. Let's have a look. Just say we took a $10 call. Let's say we did it on, I don't know, Telstra or BHP. Obviously, they're trading nowhere near $10. And let's see what the option is doing at specific price level. So if we look at the first one, say the option is trading at $8. All we're really buying at this level is time value. It's what we call an out of the money option. Now with the out of the money option, basically the stock needs to move significantly to get any value. Just look at it this way. If we've got the right to buy something at $10, we're not going to buy it unless it's worth more than $10. If we could just go into the share market and buy it at $8 at the moment. So that option really has no value other than the fact that at some point in the future before expiring, we may be able to use it. Now one thing to point out, and as I go through this, I'm going to point out the level of leverage you're getting at each. Does everyone know what leverage is in the room? Yep. So multiplying our trading power. Basically, out of the money options increase our trading power significantly. The more out of the money it is, the more the movement can potentially be on several dollars of movement. The only thing is it's less likely to occur. Say the stock's trading at $10. A $10 option is what we call at the money. An at the money option is basically something that's pretty much at the same trading price as our strike. These particular types of options, the leverage you get on them is nowhere near as high as an out of the money option. The reason being, just due to the way options are priced, you're probably looking at anywhere from say 1 to 2, 1 to 3, 1 to 4 leverage, depending on the actual theories you're looking at, in terms of the actual movement. Now I'm going to go through later a concept called delta, which is the movement in the underlying security, and you'll get an idea of what I'm talking about in terms of leverage on the movement. When the stock's actually trading at say $12, it's what we call an in-the-money option. In-the-money options basically will get executed. The reason being, if we can buy it at $10 and it's currently trading at $12, well, there's at least a $2 gain to be made there. So that is going to be executed. And a lot of these options, the actual leverage you get or the movement you actually get tends to be fairly in line with the actual stock price. Now, I'm going to go through Delta later, but it'll give you an idea. And on this slide here, I'm actually going to be referring to, when I go through Delta, these types of options in relation to the actual movement. Let's have a look at the other side of the coin, which is put. Puts are basically protecting against falls in the market. So if we were just to buy a put, say we bought a $10 put, we're assuming that the stock is going to go down. We're actually hoping it's going to go well below $10. So we can make money. But what a put option gives us is the right to sell at a future point in time at the $10 price. if that's what our strike is. If you're short a put, you don't have unlimited risk, but you have the risk that the stock can go to zero. So basically, if you say to someone, I'll buy your Babcock & Brown shares off you at $20, and Babcock & Brown does what we knew it did, well, you will be buying 1,000 shares of Babcock & Brown at $20 with a face value of zero. Gives you an idea of when we're writing options, how the risk profile can look. That's the main reason I'm not looking at them today but in the strategy. Again, this time we're just going to have a quick look at exactly how this would work from a profit point of view. Basically, if the stock is trading at $12, we're not going to want to sell it at 10, are we? We're going to sell it at $12. Our option really has no value other than the time value. Now, 20% out of money, that option is not going to have a whole lot of value. Trading at $10 when the price is at $10, well, that's pretty much giving us a good level of protection. We'll go through an example of using these to ensure our stocks later, and this will give you a bit of an idea of what you can do. And if the stock's trading at $8 and we've got a $10 put, well, we're selling something at $10 that's now only worth $8. Keep in mind, with all these scenarios, we are paying for this ride. So we don't get the ability to sell something at $10 when it's at $8 for free. There is a premium involved. Now, one of the things I just quickly want to go through here is this difference between when we're long and when we're short the option. As I said, we're not going to be covering short, but it is important that you are aware that you can go short options just in case you accidentally did it or that was your intention, just so you're aware of it. When we're buying options, what we're doing is we're buying rights. Basically, we're saying, well, I want the option to do this, or I want the right to do a particular course of action in 3 months, 12 months' time, and I'm going to pay you X amount of money to do it. Very similar to buying insurance on a house. I assume everyone in the room insures their house or their contents. All it's doing is giving you the option to actually, if you get robbed, get your money back. Nobody's going to go out and actually try and get robbed. Exactly the same situation we have with options, but with options we can actually trade them. We can be looking to make a profit by speculating on the market. When we're writing options, what we're doing is we're acting like an insurance company. We're saying, for this amount of money, I'm going to give you the right to make me do this at some point in the future. They are far more risky, and you will be margined. For people that haven't traded with margins before, basically what it means is as the position moves against you, so as you're losing money on the position, you have to pay money to guarantee your position. If you can't pay these margins, you have to close out of the position, and in that particular situation, it would generally be a substantial loss. Now, one thing to point out to people that have traded with a margin loan or have traded CFDs before. Option margins are not linear. What I mean by that is, with a CFD or a margin loan, you lose $1,000, stock goes down by $1,000, 99 times out of 100, the most you'd ever pay is that $1,000 loss on either product. With an option, due to the way the options are priced, which we'll go through in a little more detail in a minute, it can actually increase. So you can actually end up paying far more than $1,000. You might end up paying $3,000, $5,000. It's very difficult to calculate. But it's one thing to be aware of, and it's where a lot of clients can get themselves in trouble when trading options on margin. That's why we're going to be focusing on long. And for anybody who's looking to open an account, what I generally suggest is get used to just buying options and selling the options you already have before you go to write. It is a big step. Pretty much covered most of this. One thing I do want to point out, Bob, is this last point down the bottom here. There's two types of options. Now, I'm really just pointing this out for, I guess, completeness. Most options that you will trade will be American. Now, American options, as a style, don't think of them as the country America. Think of them as a style American. American, you can basically execute whenever you want. So you can execute the insurance or you can act on the policy whenever you wish. European, which is the other type of option, you can only do them on the expiry date or on preset dates, depending on the situation. But in Australia, it's pretty much the expiry date. In terms of margins that CompSec charges, margins are actually set by the Australian Stock Exchange. It's actually one of the subsidiaries for people's fleet, but the ASX basically sets the margins. CompSec charges double those margins. It's basically when you take out an options position, CompSec's guaranteeing the ASX, and you're guaranteeing us. Best way we can protect ourselves to protect the whole market is to charge double the margin. That's pretty much industry practice. Very few retail brokers will allow this standard margin. Now let's have a look at the actual pricing of options. Now, with options, the best way to think of pricing, and like I said, there is quite complicated mathematics behind this that you can have a look at if you wish, but I won't be following it. Basically, the main elements of options pricing are up on the board. Now the first one is the volatility. With an option, what we're doing is we're saying we want the right to buy something at a particular price in the future that may be, say, $2 away from the current price, for example. Now what's more likely to get $2 from the current price? Something that moves really quickly, your BHPs, your Rios that move 5, 6% a day, or your Telstras that basically don't move, unless they make announcements or something like that. And that's what we refer to as the volatility. How much is this stock really moving? How much is the whole market moving? Over the last, say, 12, 18 months, you've seen option prices go up substantially. The reason for this is the concept of volatility. Volatility has increased substantially. The risk of writing an option has got larger. Now, the easiest way to think of volatility, and a lot of people, and we see this all the time, people will say, I'm not paying $3 for a Rio Tinto option for a month. That's like 5% of the stock price. I'm not paying that much. The one thing to be aware of is somebody else is writing you that policy. So would you be willing to write a Rio option for less than $3? Probably not. And this is where the pricing of options comes into play. This volatility is probably one of the key ingredients in terms of determining what an option trades for, what that premium is. The next big one is time to expiry. General rule of thumb here is, the longer away the expiry date is, the more you pay. So December 2010 is going to cost far more than December 2009. That said, it's not going to cost double or triple. It's going to cost more, but pricing doesn't tend to be linear. It's going to cost you a bit more, but not double, triple, whatever may be the case. Future dividends. Basically, the dividend or ordinary dividends in a stock will not lead to any adjustment on the option. So, for example, if we know that, I think Telstra's just paid their dividend, but if we know Telstra's paying, are they paying 14 cents now or 12 cents? 14? Yeah, I knew it was one of the two. Basically, if we know that they're going to pay 14 cents tomorrow, and we're writing a put option, so we can reasonably expect the value of Telstra is going to fall by 14%, that's going to be included in the price of the option. Also, if we're buying coal, it's going to be effectively subtracted, because we're expecting the option, the stock to fall by that dividend amount. The person who holds the stock is going to be the person who gets that dividend. One thing with dividends can lead to early exit rights. But we'll go to that in a second. And this last one is specifically relevant in markets like Australia. The liquidity of the underlying security. Believe it or not, most trading in the Australian market takes place in the top 5 to 10 stocks. And by most, I'm talking over 50% of all trading in the options market takes place on the top 5 or 10 stocks. Reason for that, I'll get to in a second. When we're trading options, unlike shares, if we're all trading BHP in the room, for example, and we want to create a trade or we want to have a trade, all it requires is somebody looking to buy and somebody looking to sell. With 200 people in the room, we're probably not going to get people who want to buy and sell all the time at the same time, but when we extend it across the entire economy, you tend to get natural supply and demand of people selling and buying BHP. There's only one BHP in Australia. With options, there can be tens, hundreds of series of options. We've got different strike prices, we've got different dates, we've got different calls, puts, all the different elements, which means the odds of somebody wanting to buy a $39 call of BHP right now when I want to buy it or sell it is very, very unlikely to occur. This is true of all options markets around the world. It doesn't matter how big the population is, when you've got this many instruments, it's very unlikely you would have somebody that wants to trade. So the way we get around this is the ASX uses market makers. Now basically what a market maker does in the options market is it basically says I'm willing to buy and sell virtually all the time. They're obligated to do it by the ASX, and you'll generally have multiple market makers in each series that are willing to make prices and trade on them. Now there's a few myths about the way this particular market making policy works. Quite a number of people think that basically if you buy a $39 call on BHP, that the market maker's betting I'm going to lose. Now, realistically, in a regulated market like the options market, you can't operate that way. You'd be out of business in minutes. Because at the end of the day, professionals are no better at picking the market than the average retail client most of the time, contrary to what we like to think. So assuming that we're not in a situation where we just want to bet against clients or market makers don't want to bet against clients, what we're going to do is we're going to look to hedge the position. Now this hedging is a dynamic process, and it's got to do with the actual leverage involved in the options. Now the actual leverage of the options, I tend to look at from the point of view of the delta of the option. So if we move 1 cent on a price, so BHP moves 1 cent, what actual movement are we going to get on the actual option? So for example, if we have a delta 1, what that means is we're getting 1 cent of movement for 1 cent of movement. So every cent that the share price moves, we're going to get 1 cent of move on the option. This is generally going to be a heavily, heavily, heavily in the money option that approaches 1. Around half, we're generally looking at options that are at the money, and towards the bottom, we're looking at options that are outside the money. Basically, this calculation here shows what a market maker would be doing. They're basically selling a certain number of shares dependent on the delta to hedge their positions. Now this is dynamic, it happens all the time. They're doing it in other option series as well, and they're using things like CFDs or futures, various other contracts to hedge their positions. Now, with the actual leverage that we're looking at here, I'm sure most people in the room picked up on the point that how is it more leveraged if we've got an option that's only going to move 20 cents for every dollar that the stock moves. It seems less leveraged, but generally what you're talking when you buy one of these options, you put down a very small amount of money. For an option that is really not likely to happen, you put down a very small amount of money. This particular option up here, you're effectively wearing the risk of holding the stock. And in the middle here, we basically probably where a lot of people trade. Trading is part of the risk, but you're also putting down a reasonable premium for the risk involved in the actual trade. Now we're assuming 1,000 shares here. So basically in this situation, if we've got an option that is 0.2, so in other words, for every dollar we move, we're going to get a 20 cent movement in the stock price, we need to sell 200 shares as a market maker to do it. You'll notice as this number increases, the number of shares that need to be bought and sold will also increase. And this is part of the way you're just using shares that a market maker can hedge their position. Let's have a look at some of these risks before we move on to, I guess, the more interesting part of the presentation. Options are an asset that basically declines in value. So as we get closer to expiry, the level of value in an option decreases. The reason for this is, as I said earlier, the best way to think of an option is it's just the right to do something in the future. As we get closer, the odds of actually needing to use that extra option reduces every day. And in fact, it increases in the way it reduces as we get closer to expiry. So tomorrow's option, for example, expiring, is virtually worthless at $1,000. To the point that probably no longer trades with you. Leverage in options can result in significant losses. Now, one of the things I like to point out to you is how we actually define large losses in this situation. Because it can be a bit of a debatable point, and some of the education providers around that do options will actually say that options are significantly less risky, and I'll sort of explain both arguments here. If we buy 1,000 BHP, for example, and we put down $39,000, or $38,000, wherever it is, the risk that we have is $38,000. BHP goes broke tomorrow, we lose our $38,000. If we buy an option to buy BHP at, say, $38, and we pay, say, $2 for it, well, the maximum we can lose is the $2. So we've got $38,000 as our maximum loss on one side, and $2 as our maximum loss on the other. But why options are seen as risky is the odds of losing that $2 is much higher. Because just look at BHP as an example. Everyone in the room traded stock. If I said tomorrow that BHP was going to fall from 38 to 36, people would think, oh, it's a big move, but possible. If that's going to move to $10 tomorrow, or $2 tomorrow, most people in the room would say, oh, yeah, well, I don't think that's going to happen. And that's where the actual risk comes into play. It's all the actual investment you made. So when we're putting the $38,000 in, there's a reasonable expectation, at least in the short term, that we're not going to lose a substantial percentage of the investment in the stock. Naturally, if we're diversifying our portfolio, it reduces the risk of losing. But with an option, it's quite conceivable that BHP could go from 38 to 36, in which case the option basically is out of the money. So the value of that option has dropped substantially. We may be looking at a 50-60% drop in the value of the option. So we put $2 in, it's now worth $1. 50% of our money gone. Of course you would have lost similar amounts of money in the share, or probably even more, but it is something to be aware of, and you can lose a substantial amount of the capital you invest in a trade. Good news is, you don't need to invest as much to get the same sort of exposure. Written options. They can carry potentially unlimited losses. The unlimited losses are only on the upside. To be perfectly honest, unlimited losses are more of a technical situation than a reality. Most people would say puts are more risky because companies are more likely to go to zero than they are to triple overnight, at least on the top 50 or so stocks. I've never heard of a company like BHP tripling or quadrupling overnight. One other thing with written options is, and one of the things I like to point out to clients in huge detail, and I know people that have done this sort of situation, is whenever you're writing an option, look at it and go, right, I'm getting $500 or $200. Most people think I'm getting $200 for free, particularly if it's out of the money. You know, Rio's at, I don't know, $60, let's write an option at $40. We might get $100 for it, $200 for it, whatever we're going to get. And most people will say, well, I'm quite happy to buy Rio at $40 in a month's time. So I'll take the $200 and it's free. Of course, it's not free, because most people that write a $200 option won't just write one. They'll write 10. And then if Rio goes to $30, you've got 10,000 shares of Rio that got $10 out of the money. That's a $100,000 loss. So something to be very aware of if you're writing options, that there's no such thing as free money. It doesn't exist. You might get it right 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, but as I said, $200 times 10, there's 2,000. And on the scenario, you lose 100,000. The one time in 100 or wherever that it loses, writing options that don't make sense, i.e. you're not getting enough money to justify the risk, is where you can lose virtually unlimited amounts of money. And it's something to be aware of. Each of you were given one of the PDFs on the seat. That's got more of detail on the risk of trading options, than what I've just gone through. One thing, if you've ever been to one of my seminars before that I've done on CFDs or options or anything like this, you'll notice I tend to not really overstate, but go into great detail of these risks. I think it's very important that we do. Most of the risks on this slide, we're not actually going to be dealing with in the next strategy. There's not going to be unlimited risk on any of the strategies we pretty much go into. The reason being, I don't think people should start out trading written options unless you've got huge experience on something like futures or CFDs or something similar. In terms of getting started, basically there's a few documents that I'd refer your attention to. The first one would be the ASX website. Because these are exchange traded options, the ASX website has an understanding options booklet. You can have a read of. There's also a link on the Comsec website. There's also quite a number of different handouts and brochureware there that you can have a read of, including things like strategies and that kind of material. Have a read of Comsec FSG. You've probably already read it, given you're most people are an existing client. And complete the application that's at the back of the application form of the PDF. Now, you will need one of those for each entity you wish to open an account. So if you've got a super fund and you want one in your own name, you would need two applications. We've got extras if you need them, no worries there. So I guess that's the theory out of the way. That's the boring part of the presentation. Basically, options are really about how can we make money from them. Yes, we can go through definitions, we can go through all sorts of technical detail on how they're priced and that kind of thing, but let's actually have a look at how we can actually use them. And on the first strategies, I'm going to assume that people already have stock that they're holding. But I'd be correct in assuming most people in the room have at least owned some stock, and the people that are owning it are probably blue chip. Yep. Alright, great. So we're going to have a look at some of the simple strategies. And when I say simple, I don't mean less effective than the complicated ones. I just mean they're easy to get your head around. They involve one option and a stock position. Very straightforward. We're then going to have a look at some of the more combination trades. Now these are fairly straightforward combination trades. So they include two options basically. Now on the ASX website I've just referred to you to, it goes through the full list of option strategies. I think there's 26 or 28 in the booklet they have. Most of them will not work as a retail client. And there's a good reason why I'll go through this. Keep in mind the cost of actually writing the strategy. If you're paying 7 brokerages or 4 brokerages or 5 brokerages on one trade, the average person's not going to make money doing that. The ASX will make money doing that because you're going to pay fees. Your broker will make money doing that, but I don't know where a client's going to make money doing that. So we're not going to refer to any of these four-legged sort of strategies or that kind of thing. We're only going to be looking at ones that are
within the price realm of a client actually doing it, paying a standard brokerage rate. And then we'll have a quick look at the tracking platform. So the first one we're going to have a look at, and I guess this one's particularly relevant over the last little while, is actually insurance for our stocks. How can we protect against downside while keeping the upside? I was meeting with a client of mine the other day, and he was sort of saying to me, I can't buy at this level, I can't short at this level, and I don't really want to sell at this level. I said to him, well, mate, unless you're going to use some sort of option or something, you're sort of out of luck. And basically, here's where options come into play. They're going to give us options outside of the standard trading strategies we can do. I think most people in the room know we can go long stock, we can short stock, and we can just close down our position and sit on cash. Those are the three scenarios that most people are used to. So we can have cash, we can be long, or we can be short. Options give us extra sort of situations that we can put in place and have the upside while not being too worried about the downside. So what we're going to do in this situation, I'll just quickly run you through the trade, and then I'll give you an understanding of how the trade will actually work. The first one is we're going to keep our existing investment. We can buy stock up there as well, but for most people that are doing this kind of strategy, realistically, you're looking at going down the track of protecting an existing investment. You may have capital gains or various other reasons why you don't want to sell it, or you might think the market's just going to go up. So we're going to buy, or we're going to keep our 1,000 units of XYZ stock at $10, which is the current price, and we're going to buy one option at $10 strike, and we're going to pay 50 cents for it. So we're going to hand over $500 to protect our $10,000 of shares for the next 3 months. Let's have a look at how this looks. Now, the actual diagram I'm going through here is called the payoff diagram. To give you an idea, I'm just quickly going to run through how it works. Profit, loss below the line. Basically, as we move across, that's increasing the level of stock price. You'll notice I've got stock prices down the bottom here. Obviously, right here, we're talking zero. Basically, with this kind of strategy, what we're actually talking about doing is trying to keep still unlimited upside. As you can see here, there's no limit to how high the stock can go in this situation. And all of that upside we keep. But one thing you'll notice is at $10, or the strike level, that's where we cap out our losses. So the stock goes to $8, $7, $5, Babcock and Brown and goes zero, we don't lose any more than the $500. We've always got that ability to get out within the 3 months at that price. And here's where I was referring to, with the strategies we do, we're going to be able to say, here's what I lose. And obviously there's brokerages and stuff on top of that, so $500 plus say $100 to cover all the brokerages, $600 at maximum loss. However, like anything, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Normally if we just held stock at $10 and it goes to $10.20, we've made 20 cents. When we've paid 50 cents for an option protection, we've actually lost money at that point. So our break-even actually becomes 10.50. So we do need that stock to move a bit before we start making money under these kinds of strategies. There's always going to be a trade-off. But obviously if you've done this a few months ago, the stocks have ran quite a bit, but you do need to wear that risk of losing money. This using an option is a little bit different to some of the other derivative products out there for insurance. Options are not the only way to insure stocks. You can use things like CFDs and various other instruments. Where I guess options come into play is you are paying a premium to do it, but there is a cost involved, which there wouldn't be with some of those other derivatives, but you still get that upside.
Most perfect hedges, up or down, you basically just eliminate your gain or loss. With this particular strategy, you still have unlimited upside. It's just the downside you're paying away. So that's the first strategy we're going to be having a look at today, and that's insurance. You're using our existing portfolio, using options to provide protection, particularly useful if the market's falling. One thing to be aware of with this is, do we have many people in the room that are using margin loan? Alright, quite a bit. Okay, cool. Using this to protect a margin loan will work to a point. This particular strategy doesn't generate any cash flow as it falls. So if we fall down to, say, $5, so we've lost $5, and if this was the only stock, we've gone into margin call, you'd actually need to close down the option to generate the cash to actually meet the margin call. So it's just something to be aware of in that situation. The next one we're going to have a look at is the covered call. Now this particular strategy, there's two ways of looking at it. I always look at it as basically generating a good income. One thing you will notice from the last, from the next slide that I go through where I show the outcomes of various scenarios, basically it also gives a small level of protection as well. It's not absolute like the last strategy we had a look at, but if you're just mildly, like you really don't know what the market's going to do, you think it's going to go straight line or maybe up a bit, down a bit, you know, really just don't know what's going on or don't have a view one way or the other, this kind of strategy can be effective. Now this is the only strategy I'm going to show today that involves writing options. Now obviously I've said my piece about margins and how you want to be very careful of them. Where this is different to the previous comments I've made on options is we're actually lodging the stock. So we've got our 1,000 BHP shares that we already own. All we do is we take them, put them at the clearinghouse, and basically that's our margin obligation gone. We're totally covered. We can't lose on the upside. So the option can't trigger any greater loss than we would have had anyway because we're just lodging that stock. Now for the people that have a margin loan in the room, you're more than welcome to write this on your margin loan stock, provided it's a concept margin loan or a colonial margin loan. We'll do both. There are a couple of extra pages you need to do. So let's have a look at the trades that we do. Now in that situation, we can do it either buying new stock or with existing stock. I'm going to assume that we're using it on existing stock for this example. So we've got 1,000 shares of XYZ at $10. We're mildly bullish or mildly bearish, whatever may be the situation. We don't really think that much is going to happen, and we want to increase our effective income from the actual trade. So we're going to sell a call for 50 cents. Now the strike on this I've done a little bit different. I've said 10.50 for 3 marks. So we're still going to allow for a little bit of upside, around 5%. Let's have a look at the different scenarios. Now I've done, rather than do this in a payoff diagram, because not everyone gets payoff diagrams the first time you see them, I've done this as a bit of a table where we can see the outcome. Now the first one is the stock price just skyrocketed. Personally had this happen recently on ANZ up to the SPP. Basically the stock price skyrockets, you've sold at a particular point the option, and you've pretty much determined the price. Basically, it goes to $10.50 or greater, say it goes to $12, we will be selling at $10.50 when we've written this option. Doesn't matter whether it goes to $12, $15, whatever. We're done. But we're effectively selling for $11 because we sold the option for $500 or 50 cents a share. Add the 50 cents to our strike price, and that gives us our effective sale price. So that's, I'd almost say, well, I wouldn't say the worst case scenario. It is a bad case scenario, depending on whether or not you want to sell the stock. And
where I'm saying this is a bad case scenario is most people, when they start doing this, particularly if they've got a margin loan, the idea is I'll just keep writing options on my stock and hopefully it doesn't expire and I get a great cash flow and it pays my margin loan bill. It actually does work often. That can work. But if you don't want to sell the stock and it goes to $12, that can be a risk. You may need to look at something else, buying something else. Let's assume that it goes from the $10 price that is when we did it and it stays somewhere between $10 and $10.50. This is ideal. This is where the margin lending situation of just writing options and grabbing the premiums to pay our interest works brilliantly. Or if you've retired or whatever, just generating income. In this situation, we've got a not realized capital gain of anywhere from $1 to $500. And we've got our income of $500. And the best part, we get to keep the stock and any dividends. So we're paid over this period. So basically, we're laughing to the bank in that situation. If it drops from $10 to $9.50, this is slightly less desirable. Well, a lot less desirable. No one likes to lose money, even if it's a dollar. But in this situation, we basically keep the stock, but we're going to hold it anyway. If we make a loss of anywhere from $1 to $500 of capital, which we don't realise because we're not forced to sell the stock and we don't want to sell the stock, we still get our $500. And then we just rewrite next month. So we can get another 500 or 300, whatever series we want to write next month, and just keep getting the income. So I'd call that probably the second ideal situation. Because in reality, we haven't really lost money, but it's certainly not a situation where we've gained or marked all the way to the bank. The third situation of where it goes below 950, this is a bad situation. Particularly if it goes to something like $5 or something. Now, if you're going to hold the stock anyway, you're probably going to sustain the loss anyway. So it's not a situation that the option has in any way increased the loss in this situation. In fact, it's reduced it by $500, whatever the loss would have been. But it is still not a situation we'd want to be in. Like, you don't want to be writing options just to lose money. Keep in mind that in this situation, you can write again next month. And every time you do it, you're effectively bringing down the price that you bought it at. So say we bought the stock at $10 this month. We sell the call next month. We don't get exercised. It's below our price. But we've effectively now bought the stock at $9.50. So we can take the 50 cents a share off the price we paid. Now, that's not from a tax point of view. That is just from an effective purchase price. So what you actually really pay for it out of your own pocket. And if you write again the next month, we can be bringing down the price every single month. Keep in mind we're pocketing any dividends that come along the way. So as you can see in this situation, we've got a mild level of protection indicated by this level here, whereby it's gone down the stock, but we're covered by our income a little bit. We've got income in this situation and in this situation. So those last two really involve trading around our existing share positions. Now we are going to have a look at one more scenario in a minute that actually looks at trading around an existing share position. But before we do that, let's have a look at just trading options themselves using a strategy out there. Basically, multi-leg strategies. Now you've probably heard me refer to legs throughout the presentation. Apologies if I haven't actually explained what they are. Basically, each individual option we call a leg. So if you're buying a put and you're buying a call as a strategy, that's a two-legged strategy. If you're just buying a call, that's one leg. Buying a call, a put, that's one leg also. It allows us to create multiple directional trades. So more than just going long or short, using multiple options together can allow us to get outcomes that we just couldn't do using normal stocks or CFDs or that kind of trade. It's just not possible.
all we can use it to reduce the cost of individual options. So the first one we're going to have a look at is the long straddle. Basically, in this situation, what we're expecting is that the actual stock is going to move in a big way, but we don't know which direction. Now, case in point of where a lot of people use this strategy is around earnings. Take a company that's doing exceedingly well at the moment. Now, like I said earlier, and I'll flag it again, I'm not giving advice, but let's just say JB Hi-Fi, for example. This company, I think, has done brilliantly for the last however long. Don't really follow the stocks, but it always seems to go up. Basically, the earnings period for a company that's done really well or really badly for X number of periods can be highly volatile. Huge movements one way or the other. But if you're a company that is doing brilliantly or a company that's doing pathetically, well, people sort of expect brilliance. It's the old thing of if you exceed bonus or hit budget this month, your budget goes up by 10% next month. Exactly the same thing happens with stocks. And around earnings seasons, you can have a situation that you can get a wild swing one way or the other. Particularly if... around earnings season is when this can be quite common, particularly on stocks where you're having huge expectations. Now, it can obviously work really well on those companies that are doing brilliantly and the companies that are doing extremely badly, but this can work on any company. And on companies that are less expected to do either really well or really bad, sometimes the volatility on the options can be a bit lower too. So let's have a look. What we're looking to do is profit from a move in the stock, but we don't care which direction. So basically, up or down, don't care. Now this is going to involve two options, and in both cases we're buying the option. So when we're buying two options, we're paying two premiums, but there's no margining involved. The maximum loss is the sum of the two premiums. Now, the sum of the two premiums, you to lose that with this strategy, requires the most significant blip in history, but it is possible. But realistically, you're going to lose somewhere between the two premiums and zero, somewhere around there. And we're going to do it for 3 months over the earnings cycle. Now let's have a look at this. We're doing a $10 strike on both of them. Now, again, this is one of those profit and loss diagrams where we've got profit up the top and losses down the bottom. Now you'll notice in this situation here, in both situations here, what we've actually got is a situation of potentially unlimited gains, up or down. At this point here, a $10 strike, that is your maximum loss. If the close of expiry date is at $10 exactly, you are going to lose the sum of the two premiums. Now, here's where I said it's a little bit unlikely to be that situation, because you would need to hit 10 on the dot. In most cases, we're going to be talking somewhere between here and here. But we are talking quite a large movement to get to the break even on this particular strategy. Like I said, there's no such thing as a free lunch. If we're taking an option in both situations, we're almost having an each-way bet. And in that situation, our break-even becomes greater than 11 or less than 9 on a $10 strike. So we need a 10% movement in either direction before we start making money. Now, just keep that in mind. This strategy always really looks good. And every option seminar I've ever been to does this strategy, so I didn't want to be the odd one out. Because it is a very effective strategy, but you do want to be aware of how much you're paying for those two options. We really need a huge move one way or the other. The next one we're going to have a look at is something called a collar. Now, a collar is basically used to protect stocks Similar to the insurance example that we used, but in this situation, what we're actually doing is we're looking to, rather than pay 50 cents to protect ourselves while keeping all the upside, we're going to say, well, let's pay much less than 50 cents, but give away the upside, some of the upside. We'll keep some of it, but we'll give away some of it. Now, a multi-leg strategy involves selling a call and buying a put. Now, the idea is the money we get from selling the call, which is a covered call, goes to reduce the amount of money we need to pay for the actual put. So in this situation, we're keeping still some of the upside. We don't want to give it all away. What we're doing is we're saying 10.50 we'll have as our covered call with it, so we still keep 50 cents of the gain over the 3 month period, but we'll protect ourselves at the money. So at $10, we don't want to wear any downside. Now in this situation, we're going to receive 350 of premiums, and we're going to pay 500. So we are actually going to be a little bit out of pocket through this strategy, but we're still keeping that upside. So we're $150 out of pocket. But let's have a look at how the actual scenarios work out with this situation. You'll notice in this situation, again, we have a situation that if it goes well above the 10.50 price, we have an effective sales price. But in this situation, the effective sales price is actually lower. The reason being, we had to pay more for the actual put option or the protection than we got from writing the covered call. So we actually lose about $150 of income, which reduces our effective sales to $10.35. Between 10 and 10.50, we have an unrealized capital gain. Our income situation is still negative because we paid more for the actual protection than we gained. Obviously, if it goes below $10, our capital gain or our capital loss is zero. We're not going to sustain a loss because we've protected ourselves. We're still going to be the $150 out of pocket, but we've basically got that protection in place. Now, these particular strategies are actually pretty common for executives of companies. A case in point at the moment, somebody who's done it recently, who's announced the Toronto Stock Exchange, is actually the CEO of AIO. He did a collar over 4% of the new company, whatever it was, for UBS, I think. So it is quite common, particularly for people that have large holdings as maybe an executive of a particular company or a bank or whoever that's been given shares over a large period of time. And they basically don't necessarily want to sell all the stock, but they also have a situation that a large part of their holdings is in one company, and that just generates a risk for them. So it can be quite a common strategy for that situation. Obviously, we still keep all the dividends and all the franking credits. And that's all ordinary dividends. Just a couple of quick trading tips. Take profits on options. The thing with options and all the scenarios I've referred to here are expiring. It's the easiest way to look at it, looking at the last thing. But on an option that's say $10, if it's trading at $11 and it's still got 2 weeks left on it, it's going to be at least the value of the option, i.e. the intrinsic, which is the example I keep using, $10 versus $11, that $1 of difference is our intrinsic. If we sell prior to the actual period of time that we want to, of expiry, we're going to get that value plus something extra. Cut losses, particularly on short positions. If you've written an option on Babcock and Brown and it's gone from $20 down to $15, let's go out on a limb and say you were wrong about the stock. Holding it further can increase your losses substantially, and this is a leveraged instrument, so those losses can become multiplied quite large. And also avoid large single portfolios. So if you're going to trade options, it may make sense to do it over a number of stocks. If you really are just bullish on the market,
rather than go 10 years, you know, just 10 contracts with BHP, you might want to go to some BHP, some Rio, some various other companies, just so you've not got all your eggs in one basket.